Set. Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue is open. Good morning. It's housekeeping day in our committee today. Dr. Warner, we're going to start off with House Bill 2128. I'm going to open a public work session on House Bill 2128. I'm going to open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2128.
Sure.
Not enough coffee yet.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2128 is the first of two assessor bills we have up this morning. What 2128 would do is it would establish a personal liability of a lessee for property taxes related to property leased from a tax-exempt U.S., state, or local government owner, and it would provide the counties with means of collecting unpaid taxes from the person or person's real and personal property who's leasing the property. It requires the county clerk to immediately issue writs of attachment on application by tax collector or district attorney, and applies to property tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2015. And really the underlying idea here is the bill, it is more of a tax collection or enforcement mechanism. And it relates to when the property is being leased from an exempt owner, it then becomes, if it's leased to a taxable owner, it then becomes taxable. Now, at the time the lease ends and the property essentially reverts back to the tax exempt owner, if there are still some taxes outstanding, there's not really a good way for the tax collector to, they can't foreclose on the property and sell it to recover the unpaid taxes. So the idea is to make the lessee personally responsible for those unpaid taxes. And we do have the paperwork. It has a minimal fiscal impact, and I can walk through briefly the revenue impact if you'd like at this time, or you can wait till after the testimony.
Well, let's call Tom and Doug up first to maybe give us a hypothetical and describe the problem we're fixing or attempting to.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Linhares, and I represent the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. As you know, and Kyle explained very well, property owned by an exempt entity, either the federal government, state government, or local government, is exempt from taxation unless the property is leased to a taxable entity. Then the property becomes taxable. And typically, usually, that works out fairly well, depending on how the lease is worded. Typically, the taxable lessee pays the taxes. The problem that House Bill 2128 attempts to address is when that lease expires and isn't re-leased to a different entity, the exempt ownership takes possession of the property. They're no longer subject to taxation going forward. But if there are delinquent taxes that haven't been paid during the period when it was leased to a taxable entity, there's no way to collect those taxes. They remain on the tax roll. They accrue interest, just like all other delinquent property taxes. But because the county can't foreclose on a public entity, they essentially sit there uncollectible. So what the And anecdotally, it appears like there are some cases where perhaps the lessee was aware of that and simply didn't pay the taxes the last year of the lease, knowing that they were going to be gone in a year, and there was no provision for going back to that taxable entity and collecting those back taxes. So what House Bill 2128 does is it takes those delinquent real property taxes and makes them collectible the same as business personal property taxes, in other words, a personal lien of the taxable entity. So the county, if there were significant, and it does, it's permissive. So if there's $15, $20, $30, the county isn't going to go to a whole lot of trouble to collect those taxes. But if there's $20,000, $30,000 in taxes, then the county can go to court, take action against the former taxable lessee to collect those taxes and distribute those taxes to the schools, cities, special districts where that should have gotten those taxes if they had been timely paid. So that's the nature of the problem that the bill addresses. It was favorably received in the House, voted by the House 58-0, and so That's what the bill is all about, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. Can you give us an idea of what properties we're talking about? These are county. Can you give us a case for this?
A lot of these cases have to do with port property. Ports are in the business of economic development. They own a lot of property. They lease a lot of property, and there's quite a bit of turnover. So that's a real typical example. It could be any other public exempt ownership. City leases it to Bear Land for parking. School districts. It can involve any number of public entities, federal, state, local government. The biggest example is port districts, but it could pertain to any public exempt ownership.
Questions? Senator Boquist?
Yes. I get the port, so what I'm... Hopefully the assessor can give us a real example. In the port situation, what we're really talking about, as I think I heard you say and Kyle say, is that because the ports or some public entity wrote a crappy contract that, you know, they're able to skate out from underneath the contract, and we need a second mechanism to go back and try and collect the money from those entities who left without paying their taxes. Am I kind of hitting this right here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, I really don't think it pertains to the details of the lease agreement. The lease agreement could say the taxable entity is responsible for the taxes, or it could be the exempt owner has increased the lease payments to include taxes, and the exempt owner pays the taxes. The real problem comes when the lease expires. And for whatever reason, just because there's provisions in the lease that the taxes have to be paid doesn't always mean the taxes do get paid. They usually are. In some cases, they're not. What this bill, the problem this bill attempts to solve is in those rare cases where the lease expires and there are delinquent taxes due, regardless of who was responsible for paying those taxes to begin with, if there are taxes due, we can't collect them.
Follow up. Well, I know my good assessor has other things to be doing, so there must be an example here. Is there like a real example? Are we really talking like the Port of Portland, maybe the Port of Coos Bay, and some pretty big chunks of change here? Is that what we're talking about?
Mr. Chair,
you guys did a lot of work here to do this bill, and if it's that size of problem, obviously there's a bigger problem. I'm just kind of like a real-world example.
Senator Chair, Senator Boquist, Port of Portland was a problem child for many years for Multnomah County. The county assessor, who unfortunately was in trial today and couldn't be here to discuss this with you, they've worked diligently with the Port of Portland in the last several years to avoid these kinds of problems. But they can crop up anywhere at any time.
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, I've been trying to think of an example in Polk County. And I can't, but I know that the example that Doug Schmidt, Polk County Assessor, sorry. An example that the Multnomah County Assessor was talking to me about was he had a group of attorneys who were leasing space in, I think, either the city or county building. So that made that space taxable. And the attorneys decided when they moved out, they didn't want to pay the taxes on that portion of that property. And so you could have, even in Polk County, you could have a beneficial client maybe in the county courthouse but was taxable, and if they decided to walk away, I can't foreclose on the county. And so, again, I apologize. I don't have a good example from Polk County that this has happened. A lot of times it's not a large amount of money, and like Tom said, it is a permissive that we have to figure out if it's worth it to go after those taxes, the same as we would personal property. So I apologize. I don't have from Polk County an example directly that relates to this that I can give you.
Well, I guess already we can go after lawyers.
Other questions? Yeah.
I'm thinking.
Okay.
I don't have any questions though at the moment. As long as we're not working the bill at the moment.
The revenue impact, Kyle?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So in the revenue impact, it is Just first off, there's a slight revenue increase. There's a typo, and it's kind of stuck in a list. I've been trying to move that. It says total revenue reduction, but it actually is a slight increase. And this is based on the information that we've received from the county assessors about the outstanding amounts that are out there right now. And we can see it's about, for a biennium, about $200,000 or so. And I averaged this out, though, because really it's more, it depends upon if it's really driven by maybe a large property or two or a leasee that's not being paid. So it probably wouldn't be a consistent $200,000 every biennium. It might be $400,000 every other or something on those lines. But just averaging out to give a kind of a sense of it's not a huge impact, I suppose. It's usually just driven by a few properties. And it is just on the line, even though this is a revenue increase, it's not a bill to raise revenue. Right. The taxes that are imposed, this is really more about collecting the taxes that are imposed.
So even though it says total revenue reduction, we'll change that. It's just a very, very slight inadvertent revenue increase, which makes sense if we go after these delinquent accounts. Senator Boquist.
Since I think we're going to move, so we have to correct the, before it hits the floor or whatever, the OLS has to correct the right deal. And Kyle, since your staff, you were in the other hearing, did they have an example in the other hearing?
Yes, Senator Boquist. I believe that the example that the assessor from Polk County was kind of discussing was the one that Multnomah County brought was, it was, the way they portrayed it at least was a little bit, it was a group of lawyers that were kind of cued into the fact that there was no way to collect the taxes.
I'm liking this bill better all the time.
So I think that was the idea. But it really was discussing from what we've seen. It's generally a few large properties in primarily, I believe it was Multnomah County from the data we have. There's a few scattered that are smaller amounts, but whether or not an assessor would go after the couple hundred dollars, it is permissive, but it is driven by the larger ones that come up here and there.
Right, and one follow-up just for the record that's sort of related to this, and Kyle can answer this. Just for the record, I mean, one of the issues, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, one of the issues, of course, you can't really go after, it's hard to go after a foreclosed on a piece of property in Oregon because first you have a three-year statute of limitations and or statute, you have to be back taxes 3 years. And then, of course, Oregon has another anomaly passed after the Great Depression, which is even if you foreclose on a property and the county or the city or the public entity takes it, there's another option for another 3 years that if they pay their back taxes, then the city or county or whoever has to go back and buy the property and give it back to them. So it really, I mean, it's very hard to foreclose, contrary to popular belief, for a public entity to foreclose on property. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator Boquist. It's generally discussed that it is about a five-year or so by the time when the taxes are not paid to when it's finally foreclosed and sold.
Last follow-up. So this is sort of a mechanism, at least in problem children, which sounds like they're attorneys mostly, we can go after them and we're using a different mechanism.
It does put the, rather than follow the property, it would be the individual or the company that leased the property.
Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I guess what I'm seeking is a little bit of clarification about the status of current law. So current law says that, to use the port example, that property is not taxable. But so I guess what I'm wondering is, are they marketing that non-taxable status as a benefit for being on port property, or does current law actually still obligate the a lessee to pay property taxes? We're just fixing a collection mechanism.
Senator Haas, Senator Edwards, property taxes follow the land. So typically, if delinquent taxes are owing for 3 years, the county can foreclose on it. With these types of situations where the property is owned by an exempt owner, there wouldn't be any property taxes. Unless they lease the property to a taxable entity, then it becomes taxable. And it could be taxable for 3, 4, or 5 years.
Okay.
Once the lease expires, the taxable lessee goes away. The public entity, be it the port, the city, the county, now has possession of the property. The taxes stay with the land. And so they continue on the assessment and tax roll, accruing interest, which the public exempt entity that owns the property is liable for. But there's absolutely no incentive for them to pay the taxes because they know we can't foreclose on it. So the taxes just sit there. And there's probably cases where delinquent taxes have been due for 10, 12, 15 years. And it just keeps accruing interest and just keeps building up. The exempt owner doesn't have any incentive to pay, and we can't foreclose. So this just sort of inserts in that process a different collection mechanism, getting back to who should have paid the taxes in the first place, the taxable lessee.
Chair Haas, Senator Edwards, a non-taxable, an exempt entity can lease part of their building, part of their land to a taxable entity. That makes that portion of that property taxable.
In current law.
In current law. Okay. And so when that taxable entity vacates that property, then it reverts back to a non-assessable status.
Right.
In current law.
Okay.
Going forward. But
yes.
But the delinquent taxes remain.
Thank you. That's a helpful clarification.
No other questions. If you guys would just stand by for a second. I think we're ready to
are we, this. So are,
I think we're ready.
Well, you might be ready.
Okay.
But I'm just wondering, is there any testimony from any of these entities?
We have no
Anybody
one else signed up.
Signed, I mean, it's odd to me that we would have a bill that affects... sounds like it could significantly impact ports, and no ports are here to testify on it.
Okay. We'll hold off.
I mean, I would just like the chance to at least call them and hear their side of the story if they are significantly impacted. I'm not saying I'm against the bill, but...
Senator Riley?
If I understand the bill correctly, it doesn't impact the ports at all. They're not the people who are going to have to pay the taxes. Now, the people who are going to have to pay the taxes are the people who leased the property and then left without paying the taxes. Am I correct?
Chair Haas, Senator Riley, that is correct. The non-assessable entity, the municipal entity, does not bear any burden in this because we can't collect from them. What this bill does is it allows us to go after the person who is leasing the property and attach a lien to their other real property or personal property that they have. It's similar to what we can do with business personal property. If they're delinquent and then the equipment is gone, we can still, under current statute, attach that tax lien to other real property or personal property that they own. It's the same thing. It doesn't. This burden of taxes doesn't fall back on the port or the non-assessable city or county. So it only falls on the person who should have been paying the taxes, which was the person leasing the property.
So the ports would not be affected here.
Right.
So that's what they would probably testify if they came forward.
Well, that's what I wanted clarification on, because I heard the words problem child used, and so that made me think, okay, there's a little bit of conflict here between at least one particular port and one particular county, and I wanted to hear more about
that. So are you okay? You're not going to be a problem child on this bill, then?
Maybe not out of committee, but it's a few days before it hits the floor.
You just add, I guess, more clarification. This bill sort of helps the public image and the personal interrelationship from the port and the county assessor, because this now allows a mechanism for a public entity who, as once again, maybe their lease agreement wasn't so great, and the port or whoever it is not liable, but now they can at least with a straight face look at the assessor and say, okay, you have a mechanism to go collect this, you know, even though we kind of should have helped you out, but we didn't. So this really helps ports and counties and these people who do this sort of thing on the government side, because it gives them, they can now turn back to the assessor and says, well, you now have this mechanism of law, you can go collect this yourself.
Yeah. Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, I don't want to throw ports under the bus. They were used
did.
because there's some large dollar properties that are leased on ports. But this could be a situation. As an example, you know, City of Independence, they have a large soccer area that the city runs. If they decided to lease that out to a taxable entity to run that, then we would have to put that on the tax roll. But if they walked away and didn't pay the tax on that, then we couldn't collect the tax from the city. So it's not just the ports. It's just that they are probably the big ticket item in the whole scenario.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
Well, you opened you opened the Medusa's head here, but sure. I have a question. We know recently, at least in my district, and I think most everybody's district here has been impacted. I mean, the Port of Portland is leasing terminal facilities, and we had shipping lines quit, and so on and so forth. I would assume under the existing law that the entities that are leasing the now defunct terminal in the port, because all the shipping companies left, that leasing company would, in theory, have to be paying property taxes because it's a private entity. And now that they have no customers and no stuff, if that goes south and they don't pay their lease, their taxes based on that lease, this is the exact mechanism that would be utilized to go collect that lease.
That's right.
Yep.
Does that sound correct, everyone?
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, without having a port in Polk County, the way I understand they work, that would be correct.
Right. Yeah.
Your assumption would be correct.
Yep. Getting closer to ground zero, I think.
And so... So the mechanism then in this bill allows a lien to be attached to your personal property of a lessee that is no longer leasing.
Right? Chair Haas, Senator Edwards, that is correct. Plus, if they have other real property, it could be attached to the real property also. Okay. It's not just personal property. It's whatever property they have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Okay. Chair, I move House Bill 2128 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2128 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. We will correct the revenue reduction in OLAS to show revenue increase by those same amounts that you see up there. It's a typo. Other discussion? Objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2128 goes to the floor of Oregon State Senate. We're back over here. Senator Riley, would you like to carry this bill?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. And I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2128. I'm sorry. I will open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2129.
Yes, Mr. Chair, so House Bill 2129 is the second of the assessor bills we have up today, and it would allow a taxpayer to petition the county assessor to correct in maximum assessed value of property for the current tax year upon demonstrating that a new property improvement to property added to the tax roll in a prior tax year did not exist as of the assessment date for the prior tax year or any subsequent tax year. And it goes on to require the assessor to correct maximum assessed value of the property for the current tax year in a manner determined by the assessor. The correction must reflect in a manner determined by the assessor removal of the new property or improvements, and it requires property constituting an integral part of land or improvements that has been continuously in existence since the prior tax year and was not included in any assessment in prior tax years to be considered new property or new improvements to property. And it applied at property tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2015. And the general idea behind the bill is it would allow a petitioner, so a property owner, if their property is being assessed in a greater amount of what it is. So say the property itself is actually 2,600 square feet and it's being assessed at 2,800 square feet, they would petition the county assessor to make the correction to reflect that square footage change. And then the second part of the bill is allowing almost in some ways the opposite, or in the case when new property is added to the roll, so if a homeowner adds an addition to a house, the county assessor would add that as an exception event and that value would get added to the property. But if for some reason that got missed, and it wasn't until years later that the assessor caught that, so maybe 3 years down the road they find out there was an addition made to the property, they would then add that to the roll at that time. So it kind of gives two things. It offers a reduction if it's overstating a property, and then it also offers instances where an assessor, if the property is being undersized, say the opposite example where it's actually 2,800 square feet and the assessor has it listed at 2,600 square feet, the assessor could add that 200 square footage. And we do have the paperwork on this. There's no fiscal, and the revenue impact is minimal.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Linhares, and I represent the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. House Bill 2129, as Kyle explained, allows for some changes to the maximum assessed value of property given certain situations. As you know, Measure 50, passed by voters in 1997, created three values for each piece of property. The real market value, which is computed the same as it always had been before, based on the assessor's estimate of what the property would sell for on the previous assessment date. The maximum assessed value, which was created in 97 as the 95 value less 10%, and then only allowed to increase 3% in subsequent years, unless there were events to the property, such as new construction, disqualification from special assessment, and some others, which would allow an increase above that 3%. And then the third value is the assessed value, which is simply the lower of RMV or MAV. And it's a little bit more complex than that. If you're talking about farm forest properties, it gets really, there's actually five values for each farm and forest property, but I won't go into those. But the point is the maximum assessed value, which was established in 97, the original constitutional language and the bill implementing Measure 50 in 97 had absolutely no provision for reduction in the maximum assessed value. I want to repeat that. Absolutely in no circumstance could MAV be reduced. It would just keep going up 3% forever. Well, it didn't take long for that to cause a problem. And I had a real live case when I was assessor of Columbia County. Measure 50 said if property was changed, if you tore down one building and built a new building, then the exception value, the value that would allow an increase above 3%, would be netted. So if the old building was worth $10,000 and the new building is worth $20,000, you would net that, and so the increase in MAV would be based on an increase of $10,000 in real market value, if that occurred in 1 year. I had a case in Columbia County where they tore the old building down in 1 year, waited a full year, and built the new building. Well, the first year when they tore the building down, there was no provision for reducing MAV. The second year when they built the new building, the netting only occurs in the same year, so we added the full $20,000, which increased the MAV. So essentially, both buildings, the old one that no longer existed and the new one, were reflected in the MAV. And it took me quite a while to explain that to the property owner.
He must have been pretty happy with that explanation.
Mr. Chair, fortunately, I was able to explain it to them so they understood it. They still didn't like it, but at least understanding it, they could accept it. So over the years since 97, primarily at the request of the Oregon State Association of County Assessors and the Department of Revenue, laws have been passed which allowed reductions in MAV in certain cases. So House Bill 2129 is just sort of another one of those, sort of an evolution of Measure 50 to allow for a more fair and equitable property tax system. So there's, as Kyle explained, there's three changes that House Bill 2129 provides. The first is if a property doesn't exist, but for some reason the assessor thought it did 2, 3, 4, or 5 years ago. Say they had a building permit for an outbuilding and they, for whatever reason, mistakenly thought that the outbuilding was actually built, and they increased the RMV, increased the MAV, and taxed it accordingly. And for whatever reason, the property owner didn't pick up on that. When they got their tax bill, they, oh, damn, assessor just increased my taxes. But 3, 4 years later, they come in and say, you're assessing me for a $20,000 outbuilding that I never built. Oh, we really apologize. We're sorry. We'll remove the value of that $20,000 outbuilding from the real market value. What about my assessed value? No, the law doesn't allow us to reduce the MAV, so the MAV is going to stay the same. Okay. So House Bill 2129 would allow the assessor to reduce the MAV to reflect the fact that that outbuilding was never built. A different change that House Bill 2129 makes is the opposite. If, for whatever reason, the building permit, say the owner didn't get a building permit was lost, or the appraiser who was assigned to appraise that property just made an error, and didn't pick up the outbuilding. So the outbuilding's been there for 5 years, never been assessed. The assessor is made aware of that. Again, they can increase the RMV, but they can't increase the MAV. So in one case, you've got property that doesn't exist that's going to be taxed forever, and in the other case, you've got property that does exist that isn't going to be taxed forever. Neither one of those is fair or equitable. House Bill 2129 would fix both of those situations. The third change it makes is, at the request of county assessors some years ago, the law was passed which would allow the maximum assessed value to be reduced if the property owner makes a petition to the county assessor that their square footage is wrong. They read the building permit wrong, or they didn't build it according to the blueprints. And as Kyle said, the house was appraised at 2,800 square feet when in fact it's only 2,600 square feet. Current law allows us to reduce the maximum assessed value to reflect that reduction in square footage, but it requires a reduction to be proportional to the change in square footage, which seemed okay at the time, but in applying that provision, not all square footage is the same. Basement value is different than the main floor value, which is different than the upper floor value. So depending on where that square footage error is occurring, that would have a different calculation. So what 2129 does is it says, go ahead and reduce the maximum assessed value to reflect that error in square footage, but do it in a manner that better reflects the market value change of that square footage reduction. So it takes current law and just makes it a little better. So all three changes are an attempt to make the system more fair and equitable, so we avoid the situation where you have to explain to a property owner why you're going to reduce the real market value, but the law doesn't allow you to reduce the maximum assessed value, which means the assessed value and taxes aren't going to be affected.
Are we talking primarily residential or commercial?
It would apply to both, Mr. Chair. This is property, so it could be industrial, it could be commercial, it could be residential.
Questions?
Yes.
Senator Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the example that you give, when the assessor finds out 3 years later, either from the taxpayer coming in and saying, hey, you made a mistake, or the assessor finding a new property, improvement to the property that he didn't know about, and the correction is made to the maximum assessed value, does that go back and change the taxes from the previous years where the mistake was actually made, or is it just going forward?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ryan, that's an excellent question. That's at the discretion of the assessor. There is a provision for picking up what's called omitted property, but it's kind of a convoluted, complex process, and quite honestly, I think a lot of county assessors make that decision based on what kind of value we're talking about. If we're talking about $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, they might not. If they're talking $50,000, $70,000, $100,000, they probably would. They're allowed to go back up to the current year plus 5 years.
Senator Ryan.
Yeah, follow up. So that takes care of the answer is yes, he could. But the other half of that question is, when the taxpayer comes in and says, hey, you made a mistake for the past 3 years, do you go back and correct that for the past 3 years, or is it just going forward?
Okay. Chair Doug Schmidt, Polk County Assessor, Chair Haas, Senator Riley, there's provision right now in statute to correct what's called a clerical error and to go back and pick up omitted property. The issue with clerical error is we have to have sufficient information in our records to show that we are wrong. And a lot of times we don't have that information. They've put a building on the roll that was it was incorrectly added through oversight, through complexity of work, whatever. So this bill would help resolve that, where we don't have information in our record to show that our record is wrong. until it's brought to our attention. So this would be only moving from the current year forward, okay? Because the current law doesn't allow us, the current law allows us, but only if we have information in our record to prove it. It's with omitted property, the way the courts have been ruling is that if we've been to the property, there is provision where we can go current year and 6 years, 5 years back on omitted property. But if we've been to the property and for whatever reason we missed it, instead of adding something in incorrectly, we missed it. The courts have said that if you were there and you didn't pick it up, then you just undervalued the property, even though the Constitution says that we can add omitted property whenever we find it and we can add new property when we find it. So this provision, because the people have the property, but they're not paying tax on it, this would take it from that year forward and moving forward is when we can correct it. So your question of can we correct years back, under certain conditions in current law, we can. Okay? This bill allows us to fix it from the current year moving forward. Again, it can hurt the taxpayer because we can't fix the overvaluation. But if there's not information on our records to show we're wrong, right now we can't fix it at all. We can't change the MAV at all. This would at least allow us to fix the MAV moving forward to give them relief.
So what I'm hearing is that you can, unless you have not been on the property and looked at it, you can go back and assess things that you missed, but you can't give back money because you made a mistake? Is that what I hear?
We can, Chair Haas, Senator Riley, again, if there's information in our record, as an example, okay, I hate to say this, but we had a property in Dallas that years ago we had valued the land at an acre and a half when it was only about an acre. We had that information. We had to dig for it, but we had that information on our record through surveys. So when I explained to the owner, we couldn't go all the way back for the 10 years that it was wrong, but we could go back current in 5 because we had that information in our record. Now, if we wouldn't have had that information in our record, we could have fixed it for this year moving forward, but we couldn't have reduced the MAV down. So
even when you learned that you were wrong.
Yes. And that is a condition of the current law that we work under. We talked, Chair Haas, Chair Haas, Senator Riley, it does not fix that.
Right.
We discussed this bill amongst the assessors on how to go about fixing this, and we discussed it with the Department of Revenue. We felt that there was adequate protection for the taxpayers if we had information in our record. But if we didn't have it, then the discussion came in, well, what does a taxpayer have to bring in that we were wrong? What do we have to prove that we were wrong? And the feeling was that we would just take it from this year forward, give them the relief, and move forward with that. But you're right. This bill does not go back, and it was discussed multiple times on how we do that. And the decision was made on both the omitted property where we were adding and the correction of non-existent property. In these cases, because of the existing law, we would just take it from this year and move forward.
Okay.
So it was...
It's not good enough.
Question.
Okay. Trying to wrap my hands back around this. I thought I understood it. Now, Senator Riley's raised an issue, which I think I have to agree with Senator Riley at. But okay, this one did draw no votes, as you well know.
correct, Doug. You know who voted no against this thing. So my understanding right now of the present law is that there really is no mechanism to at least fix what this bill is trying to fix, which is you have a property, there was a mistake very recently, you're trying to fix it, and that way the property owner gets a break because the building was, you know, 20,000 versus 10,000. So this present bill, in theory, the way it's written, is actually an improvement and helps the property owner be able to get the future problem fixed. Is that correct?
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, that is correct.
Follow up.
You presently, under the law, if there's a mistake, you have the ability to go back and collect back taxes for that. Is that correct?
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, on omitted property, that is correct, as long as we were not at the property. Right. But again, it's only for the current year and 5 year, just like the clerical error is fixed. So the error could have been out there for 20 years, but we can only fix it for the shorter time period.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up.
So then the third piece here is that if the owner finds out that there was a mistake or something here, and as Senator Riley was pointing out, and they come back and say, well, we want relief, that can't be done. So it's kind of one-sided, presently under the law, and you guys recognize that but haven't figured out a fix.
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, that's not necessarily true. Under current law, okay, current law, if we have information in our records where we can show that we were wrong and they come in and bring that to our attention, we can go back and give them a refund. On the other side, if we have missed a property or a building on a property and didn't pick it up when we were out there 7 years ago, and we go back out and visit now, we can't add that building into the value, into the assessed value, according to what the courts have ruled. They've considered that's an undervaluation. So it goes both ways, really. We can't penalize the taxpayer if we've missed property, but yet we can't go back, but we can't correct that if it's a reduction either under current law, unless certain conditions are met. And I know we're talking different levels here, different statutes that deal with how we have to handle property. This was just a mechanism that we can go forward and fix the problem so that MAV doesn't stay on that property forever.
I'm with Senator Riley. Slightly confused here because it is complex.
I understand.
Well, that's why we have a fixed measure 50.
Yeah. Well, that's behind everything here that we're right. Talking about these fixes. Maybe a ballot measure, Senator Boquist, to
we've actually discussed this. A referral. We were discussing this. So, in short, my understanding is we got to kind of, and I would look because this did draw no votes in the House. So there's a couple of good fixes here. And then there's just the deal of, okay, there's one we didn't fix, and then there's one that some people wouldn't see. So we got a two-thirds good idea and one idea that we have found no solution for is, I think, sort of where we're at. I mean, the argument could be made is you're fixing part of it now, and we figure out how to fix the rest of it later.
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, I think part of the reason, because I was president of the Assessors Association when we started talking about this, I think we were looking at, again, this may not seem like a fairness issue, but we were looking at if we're going to fix something from this point moving forward, or if we're going to go back, we should try and do it for both. And it was difficult for us to, under current court rulings, to say we can go back and pick up omitted property. So if we couldn't do that, then maybe we should just have everything from this point moving forward, including not being able to issue a refund to the taxpayers. And I hate to say this, but again, the taxpayer does have some responsibility for ensuring that their record is correct, even if it is our fault. That doesn't relieve us of the responsibility of getting the record correct. And I'm not trying to put the blame back on the taxpayer, because a lot of times it is our fault, and they don't know.
Senator Burchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it help at all if we put language in there to the point where we could say something upon discovery? So at the point of discovery of an error, whether the property was there or not there, it's upon discovery of that we go forward.
Well, that's what this does.
Chair Haas, Senator, I'm sorry.
Senator's fine.
Senator. I avoided you up till now.
A lot of us that do that for the rest of the
I'm trying to avoid him all the time.
This is pretty simple.
That's what this bill does.
Okay.
When we discover that there is an error, either the taxpayer comes in and says, look, my square feet's wrong, you got this building on the property that shouldn't be on the property, or they say, well, I have a property that you don't have. I have a building you don't have. This allows us to fix this at the time it's discovered. And that's all this bill is trying to do.
Senator Riley.
Final comment, if I may. I think this is a good bill for what it does. It just doesn't do enough. I'm going to be a yes on the bill, and I think we need to do something going forward because that one little phrase that you use all the time, if it's on our records, is not good enough for me. Once you discover you've made a mistake, you should correct it for all the time that you made the mistake. And I can accept back to 5 years because it's hard to go farther. But you should be correcting the mistake that you know you made. You do have the ability to correct it the other way. You may choose not to, but you have the ability to do it now. And so you should have at least have the ability to correct the mistakes you know you made. So I'm a yes on the bill, but we need to do something going forward.
Senator Burchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question. With the new technology of satellite imagery, is that part of your record?
Senator Haas. Senator.
Burchard. Try it.
Burchard. Bertschiger?
There he is. See?
Okay.
Yeah. Very good.
We have access to aerial photos through flyovers that we do through Google, through Bing Maps, and we do discover properties sometimes because of that. We don't typically take a copy of that photo for in the record. But we do use it to ensure that our records are as up to date as we can. So I'm not sure that it would be considered part of our record. So I'm not sure I answered your question.
Senator Haas, Senator Berkshire, I was actually the interim director of assessment taxation for Wasco County last year. And the year before that, they had gone through a computer conversion to a new software system. And in doing the conversion work, when they were working on the account, they would then look at the aerial photo. They identified over 2,000 properties that looked like there was something different in the aerial photo than the appraisal record showed. With all the other work that they were doing, they sort of, they compile that list, and every year they do, they look at as many of them as they can. They go out and look at them. The problem is if they do find something that was there that we don't have on the record, they can add it to the real market value, but they can't add it to the maximum assessed value. So I've been telling them, don't do any more of those until we get 2129 passed so that we can, at the same time as we increase the real market value to add the building or the deck or the addition, we could also increase the MAV. Because under current law, because that improvement wasn't done the previous calendar year, Measure 50 doesn't allow us to increase the maximum assessed value to account for that new value. House Bill 2129 would allow Wasco County to do that for those 2,000 accounts.
Senator Edwards. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I largely agree with
I think, Senator Riley's assessment. But what I am wondering is, so what are the complaints? I mean, why isn't the fix that he's looking for, why is that not in this bill? What were the complications? You said you met about it, you deliberated about it, and there's why is that difficult to take care of? What are the, I imagine, unintended consequences that you guys are thinking about? Or
Senator Ross, Senator Edwards, I think some of the discussion was, and it goes back to the correcting of the role in the favor of the taxpayer in refunding taxes. It goes back to what is in our record. So if we don't have a record in the public record that a building was added as of a certain date, and we can't prove by aerial photos when it was there, then it gets into the taxpayer says it was there 10 years ago. We say that maybe in trying to do some research, it was only there 4 years. So I think part of that decision was to cut out the debate and the animosity, and just in this instance, for these properties where we don't have that information in the record, to just be able to correct it currently and move forward so that the taxpayer does get some relief and they don't have to be paying on something that wasn't on their property. Because, again, it all goes back to what we can prove, what the taxpayer can prove. And without information in our records, we can't prove beyond it, you know, with certainty when that error occurred. And I it's hard to understand how you can have something out there when we don't know it's there or not there that we show it should be there.
You can't prove a negative.
We had this discussion with the Assessors Association and the Department of Revenue at great length, and it finally just came down to we need to provide some relief for errors that of something that wasn't there outside of what current statute allows us to do. And the decision was made it would just be prospective moving forward at this point.
Senator Boquist.
Okay, so just to try and get us back on track and I guess get us to enough yes votes, you made mention 2,000 aerial photos, Wasco County, and then you made mention they probably shouldn't do anything, probably for litigation reasons, until we pass 2129. So if I understand correctly, in the situation in which you're pointing out where you have approximately 2,000 changes that look like there's either more property or less property or something on there, in this particular case, if the bill is passed, what the bill provides is they find each of those and they adjudicate those, some this year, some next year, some the following year. At the time of the adjudication of that, that will become the new value, and that will be the new value going forward. You won't be able to go back and collect for 5 years based on these photos because we passed this bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, that's correct.
Okay. So in short, at least in this case, we've got a few house examples in Polk County. We've got Wasco County photos. Is this protects, you know, at least a couple thousand taxpayers in which they won't have to go back and pay back taxes, because once you get to it, it's adjudicated. This bill says it's now effective on this date, and it goes forward versus the two or three people who didn't read their tax thing and or did intentionally, like these lawyers in the last bill. So this really helps a lot of people.
Okay. Committee, do you want my sense is that we're going to move this bill forward unless you'd like to give it a day to breathe or look at an amendment or just get this off the decks. Okay?
I'll move it as long as Senator Riley carries it.
You don't want me to carry it, believe me.
Herm?
It won't pass on the floor if I carry it.
Herm, I hate to say this, but...
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2129 to the floor and I'll speak to it.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2129 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with the do-pass recommendation. Senator Boquist.
I think this is one of those, I call it, as I said earlier, two-thirds fix to a problem. It does help thousands of taxpayers, you know, have tax certainty that if there's a change in their property, they're not going to be paying back taxes. It still leaves the one-third problem that was raised. I mean, I would encourage the assessors to come up with a solution, because you certainly don't want us legislators coming up with a solution. And I'll be happy to nominate Senator Bershinger to carry it.
I have a couple comments on the not this bill specifically, but it's interesting to me how satellite technology has come into your world over the last few years. But more than that, we made some flip comments about the problems of Measure 50. If you look at the technical bills that we've changed this session, they almost all are property tax bills having to deal with some of the nuance, the legal problems caused by Measure 50. And I just, as if we don't need another reminder, it's time that we ask voters to change that language. So that's my soapbox on that world. So other discussion? Any objections to sending this bill on? Seeing none, House Bill 2129 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do-pass recommendation. Senator Bershinger, we are up to you.
I know.
He agrees to carry this.
So fair. Is that what that meant?
Yes.
I don't do that much.
I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2131. Miles, it.
Morning, Chair.
The Chair thought this meeting was going to go more quickly.
Like he did.
Members of the committee, that this should provide relief for you from. So the bill that you have in front of you, this comes originally from the Municipal District Advisory Commission and it passed through the House Revenue and then House Floor and comes to you. The bill in its essence changes a few things. What it changes is that it makes the revenue and the property tax, primarily property tax revenues, and to be in legal language that bonds will have a more secure pledge and a lien in the language in both the first section and section two to make it more concrete language for the bonds on the property taxes. So, in short essence and in a nutshell, we're making property taxes and local government commitment a lot more attractive and a lot more, far more committed to the boys in Wall Street.
Okay. From the boys on Wall Street, we've got the baronesses of bonds before us today. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Carol McCoug. I'm a partner with the law firm of Hawk and Stella Field and Wood, and we serve as bond counsel to a number of state agencies as well as a number of Oregon local governments, and I am currently serving as chair of the Oregon Municipal Debt Advisory Commission. What House Bill 2131 attempts to do is strengthen the credit of Oregon local government general obligation bonds by creating a statutory lien on the tax revenues collected under a GO bond levy. Oregon local government GO bonds are voter approved, and they provide for a separate property tax levy levied outside of the limits of Measures 5 and 50 that are sufficient to pay the debt service on GO bonds. The GO bond has always been viewed as the strongest credit that an Oregon local government can offer to investors. However, in recent years, the question of how secure a GO bond really is has arisen across the bond markets across the country, primarily because of some questions that have arisen in the fiscal distress context and the bankruptcy context. For example, in the City of Detroit bankruptcy case, the city's initial plan proposed to treat GO bond holders as any unsecured creditor. As you can imagine, the bondholders and bond insurers challenged that plan. Eventually, the city's case was settled, and that issue was never litigated. But what we learned from the plan proposal after analysis from bankruptcy practitioners and experts across the country is that had the bondholders had a statutory lien on the tax revenues from the GO bond levy, they would have been in a much stronger position should that had that issue been litigated. Because apparently under the bankruptcy code, a statutory lien on certain revenues gives it a special treatment and more protected in a bankruptcy case. So that caused some ripples throughout the municipal bond market throughout the country, and it caused investors, rating agencies, analysts to really question what it meant to have a GO bond in various jurisdictions around the country, particularly in a bankruptcy context. Now, in Oregon, local governments are not authorized, except for a couple of very specialized special districts, are not authorized to file for bankruptcy under Chapter 9. And we like that regime. But nevertheless, there's still questions now that are brewing with investors and rating agencies. They want to know in their checklist now whether or not there's a statutory lien, even though, again, Oregon local governments are not authorized to file for Chapter 9 bankruptcy. So what we're trying to do with House Bill 2131 is really to just answer those questions and quell any unease with Oregon local government GO bonds by really putting them in the level of credit security that we've always assumed they had. The statutes currently do provide for a dedication of those tax revenues to the payment of debt service for the bonds, but it just doesn't have the magic language of giving them the statutory lien. And again, we think that would help quell any concerns about the security of GO bonds for local governments. And by strengthening the credit, it lowers borrowing costs for Oregon local governments. And of course, by lowering the borrowing costs and lowering the interest rate, it lowers taxes for property taxpayers. So with that, that's my testimony. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Very thorough explanation. Did you want to add to that?
For the record, Laura Lockwood McCall, Director of the Debt Management Division in the Oregon State Treasury. We've worked with the MDAC board to get to this point. We support that. Recent training classes through the rating agency suggest having statutory lien can help a local community with a bond issue by half a notch of their credit rating. So we think that this is a good thing for all of our communities to have on the books.
Thank you. Senator Boquist.
Okay. Intriguing. I did look through the ORS here. I mean, so back in layman terms, non-treasury terms and non-lawyer terms here, what we're doing is if we pass this bill, in short, the bond, the companies that issued the bond, purchased the bond, they will have a higher precedence in collections. Is that correct?
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, we believe so in the bankruptcy context that they would have a separate form of protection for that those tax revenues, yes.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Boy, I hate to be the Republican saying this, but I'm looking at the witness list and everything else, and it looks like this obviously sailed through, but you would think that people that were concerned about PERS would be saying, because that was one of the big issues in Detroit, that, oh boy, wait a minute. Why do we want to give them a precedence over our retirement funds? And I see the treasurer. Obviously, there's been some discussion on this, so I'm a little curious this. And again,
through the chair,
I am the Republican,
training?
So, I mean, it's a little odd for me to raise this issue.
Through the chair, that same training class that I told you about that we heard through the rating folks, They compared communities that chose to have the statutory lien, there were, for example, in Rhode Island, in the case of bankruptcy, and the bondholders came out ahead of the PERS folks. In other jurisdictions where they didn't necessarily have that statutory lien, the PERS folks often came out ahead, whether for political or legal reasons. So, yes, I think that's why the half a notch better credit rating from the rating agencies for bondholders, that's where it emerges from, because that really is a juxtaposition of the two largest creditors for most communities that are in fiscal distress.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
It's between bondholders and their pensioners.
I just don't want to be one of somebody 6 months from now saying, what did you do? So is there, I mean, I am surprised that we don't see, for better word, the likely suspects lined up to say we have concerns with this, or was there some consultation in your work group with the people who would normally, we'd normally see saying, hey, wait a minute, we want equal treatment?
I don't think so.
I'm fine with the bill. I'm just pointing out the blinding flash of the
obvious.
We're
municipal debt advisory. We're all bond issuer types.
Okay.
Through the chair, Senator Boquist, I think from our perspective, it is solidifying, I think, what our ideas were about the priority of the tax revenues already. Again on this, currently the statutes do provide a dedication of those tax revenues to the debt service on the bonds. So I think this helps put a tool in the toolbox in the situation of, again, even though Oregon local governments are not authorized to file bankruptcy, that possibility lingers out there with the market, and then this just, you know, helps mollify those concerns.
A follow-up slightly related question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since, indulge me just a little bit, because you're here and you're the experts. As you've pointed out, we don't have a statute like Illinois where in Detroit and some of these other places that have gotten into this trouble. And so our entities can't file bankruptcy, but we have these counties and cities that are in distress. I mean, from a bond point of view and your finance point of view, I mean, what are their options? If they default, what are the options and what is the next step? We passed this bill and now you have a precedence, but what is sort of the step in Oregon law for a public entity that frankly defaults? Well, I mean, what's your guys's, how do you go collect it?
If I may, through the chair, let's be really clear. We're only talking about voter-approved property taxes above the Measure 5, Measure 50 limits.
Right.
So these revenues for these GO bonds really couldn't be touched. The likelihood of default is not because of fiscal distress. It's because there's a tsunami and you can't collect taxes.
Well, okay?
I think that at the end of the day, those are separate. The GO bonds are not really part of the day-to-day, you know, how do we balance the budget? Because those dedicated revenues can only be spent for the GO bonds. Different set of issues for full faith and credit bonds that maybe communities might issue. But again, these GO bonds are voter approved, special dedicated revenue streams.
There's just one quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Being in the legislature, I mean, I would just point out that I'm fully aware of the ways and means and in the local government way of, you know, substitution. So I fully understand and you're fully correct, but local governments do interesting thing, as does the legislature. So I'm fine with the published present. Sure.
Okay, thank you both.
Thank you.
You ready?
I am ready.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2131 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2131 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Oh, no, it's my turn.
Seeing none, any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 2131 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Boquist, would you carry this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'll trade you, Brian.
Heck, this is one I'd actually trade you for.
Gentlemen, that clears the decks. I do personally appreciate the thoughtfulness into these very difficult, complicated technical housekeeping bills. We will adjourn for the day.